Hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. I'm going to read the major news articles from the Monday, July 7th, 2025 edition of Tucson's Arizona Daily Star. Before we begin with the headline articles, let's find out what kind of weather is in store for us. Today's weather, a good deal of sunshine, hot, highs to 106 degrees Fahrenheit, winds west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And tonight's forecast, partly cloudy, lows to 81 degrees Fahrenheit, winds southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow's forecast predicts sunny skies, hot, highs to 106 degrees Fahrenheit, winds northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. We'll begin with the reading of the first article on the Arizona Daily Star front page titled, Toll in Texas Floods Hits 78. This article was written by Jim Vertuno and John Sewer of the Associated Press, Dateline Kerrville, Texas. Families sifted through waterlogged debris Sunday and stepped inside empty cabins at Camp Mystic, an all-girls summer camp ripped apart by flash floods that washed homes off their foundations and killed at least 78 people in central Texas. Rescuers maneuvering through challenging terrain continued their desperate search for the missing, including 10 girls and a counselor from the camp. How many more remain unaccounted for across Texas Hill Country and beyond remains unclear, as authorities haven't given an estimate even though it has been 3 days since the storm began pounding the state. In Kerr County, home to Camp Mystic and other youth camps in the Texas Hill Country, searchers have found the bodies of 68 people, including 28 children, Sheriff Larry Lather said in the afternoon. He pledged to keep searching until everybody is found from Friday's flash floods. 4 deaths also were reported in Travis County, 3 in Burnett County, 2 in Kendall, and 1 each in Tom Green and Williamson counties. Families were allowed to look around the camp beginning Sunday morning. One girl walked out of a building carrying a large bell. A man who said his daughter was rescued from a cabin on the highest point in the camp walked a riverbank looking in clumps of trees and under big rocks. A woman and a teenage girl, both wearing rubber waders, briefly went inside one of the cabins, which stood next to a pile of soaked mattresses, a storage trunk, and clothes. At one point, the pair doubled over, sobbing before they embraced. One family left with a blue footlocker. A teenage girl had tears running down her face, looking out the open window, gazing at the wreckage as they slowly drove away. While the families saw the devastation for the first time, nearby crews operating heavy equipment pulled 3 trunks and tangled branches from the water as they searched the river. With each passing hour, the outlook of finding more survivors came even more bleak. While volunteers and some families of the missing who drove to the disaster zone searched the riverbanks despite being asked not to do so. Authorities faced growing questions about whether enough warnings were issued in an area long vulnerable to flooding and whether enough preparations were made. President Donald Trump signed a major disaster declaration Sunday for Kerr County, activating the Federal Emergency Management Agency to Texas. These families are enduring an unimaginable tragedy with many lives lost and many still missing, Trump posted on social media. The destructive, fast-moving waters rose 26 feet on the river in only 45 minutes before daybreak Friday, washing away homes and vehicles. The danger was not over as flash floods watched remained in effect and more rain fell in central Texas on Sunday. Searchers used helicopters, boats, and drones to look for victims and to rescue people stranded in trees and from camps isolated by washed-out roads. Officials say more than 850 people were rescued in the first 36 hours. Governor Greg Abbott vowed that authorities will work around the clock and said new areas were being searched as the water receded. He declared Sunday a day of prayer for the state. I urge every Texan to join me in prayer this Sunday for the lives lost, for those still missing, for the recovery of our communities, and for the safety of those on the front lines, he said in a statement. In Rome, Pope Leo XIV offered special prayers for those touched by the disaster. History's first American pope spoke in English at the end of his Sunday noon blessing. I would like to express sincere condolences to all the families who have lost loved ones, in particular their daughters who were in summer camp, and the disaster caused by the flooding of the Guadalupe River in Texas in the United States. We pray for them. The hills along the Guadalupe River are dotted with century-old youth camps and campgrounds where generations of families have come to swim and enjoy the outdoors. The area is especially popular around an Independence Day holiday, making it more difficult to know how many are missing. Survivors share terrifying stories of being swept away and clinging to trees as rampaging floodwaters carry trees and cars past them. Others fled to attics inside their homes, praying the water wouldn't reach them. At Camp Mystic, a cabin full of girls held onto a rope strung by rescuers as they walked across a bridge with water whipping around their legs. Among those confirmed dead were an 8-year-old girl from Mountain Brook, Alabama, who was at Camp Mystic and the director of another camp up the road. 2 school-aged sisters from Dallas were missing after their cabin was swept away. Their parents were staying in a different cabin and were safe, but the girls' grandparents were unaccounted for. Locals know the hill country as Flash Flood Alley, but the flooding in the middle of the night caught many campers and residents by surprise, even though there were warnings. The National Weather Service on Thursday advised of potential flooding and then sent out a series of flash flood warnings in the early hours of Friday before issuing flash flood emergencies, a rare alert notifying of imminent danger. At the Mole Ranch camp in the community of Hunt, officials had been monitoring the weather and opted to move several hundred campers and attendees at the church youth conference to higher ground. At nearby camps Rio Vista and Sierra Vista, organizers also had mentioned on social media that they were watching the weather the day before ending their second summer session Thursday. Authorities and elected officials have said they did not expect such an intense outpour, the equivalent of months' worth of rain for the area. U.S. Representative Chip Roy, whose district includes the ravaged area, acknowledged that there would be second-guessing and finger-pointing as people look for someone to blame. The next front-page article is titled Measure Bans EV Road Tax Option. This article was written by Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services, Dateline Phoenix. He's describing the measure as a freedom of travel issue. But a proposal Senator Jake Hoffman got colleagues this session to put on the 2026 ballot would remove one option that lawmakers have to ensure that the ever-increasing number of electric vehicle owners in Arizona pay their fair share of the costs of road construction and repair. SCR 1004 would put a provision on the Arizona Constitution barring state and local government from imposing a tax or fee based on vehicle miles traveled. All this comes as lawmakers continue to struggle with the fact that there are more and more gas-free vehicles on the road, and that means they don't pay the 18 cents a gallon gasoline tax that goes into the Highway User Revenue Fund. Put simply, under the current system, the shift to all electric cars could undermine the state's ability to build new roads. But potentially more important, it could also hamper upgrades and repairs to the roads Arizona now has. Approval of the ballot measure would remove the option of charging electric vehicle owners who escape those gas taxes a fee based on their usage of Arizona roads. Hoffman said it's not a question of protecting those who use electric vehicles. As the driver of a Tesla Cybertruck, Hoffman included from the taxes generated on the sale of fossil fuels. Instead, the Queen Creek Republican said this is about protecting everyone from government overreach regardless of the fuel that they use. This is the measure that I'm confident that the voters will approve because it stands on the very simple principle that government should not be taxing or tracking your miles, he said. Regardless of what type of vehicle you own, regardless of how our roads are funded, freedom to move is a fundamental liberty that has a long-standing track record in America. And Hoffman said it's more basic than that. The ability to tax, the ability to control by force, he said. Still, that leaves the question of how to pay for roads as consumers move away from fossil-based fuels. The current numbers aren't great, at least not yet. There are more than 108,000 all-electric vehicles registered in Arizona, And while that's a small percentage of the total fleet of more than 8.1 million cars and trucks, their use is growing exponentially, having more than tripled since 2020. That trend so worries ADOT that it has contracted for a study of how much electric vehicles are driven as well as projected changes. In fact, the agency is noting the replacement of new fast charging stations as part of the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, which is expected to increase the use of EVs both in Arizona and nationally. What the $74,835 study show also is supposed to do is help ADOT to determine how this shift will affect fuel use tax receipts. An agency spokesman said the report should be completed later this year or early in 2026. In the meantime, Senator David Farnsworth is the latest in a series of lawmakers who has crafted legislation designed to provide some equity. His SB 1471 would have allowed ADOT to establish a tax on electric vehicles and other motor vehicles using something other than fossil-based fuels. It provided two methods for the agency to compute the levy, but in both cases it was designed to comparable to the fuel tax that would have been paid by a comparable vehicle using gasoline or diesel. The Mesa Republican even included a provision to make sure everyone knew what he was trying to do. It included language saying the intent is to ensure all alternative fuel vehicles are paying an amount that is proportionally equal to their use of highways in the state, and that vehicles powered by petroleum-based fuels are not paying for all of their costs relating to highway use and maintenance. But Farnsworth, who chairs the State Committee on Education and Transportation, didn't push it beyond an informational hearing in March after getting resistance from some of his colleagues. There's the fear of government control and the camel's nose under the tent, and before long they're telling us where we can and can't go, he said. Is that paranoia or reality? Farnsworth asked. But the concern is real. So the measure never advanced. Still, Farnsworth said he will continue to try, saying we need to make things more fair. But the failure of his bill also paved the way for Hoffman to line up the votes for his SCR 1004, asking voters to forever eliminate one option, imposing a tax based on miles traveled. Hoffman said that doesn't eliminate all options to tax electric vehicles. For example, he said he has no problem with consumption taxes based on usage. That's a very different thing, Hoffman said. In fact, that's the basis for the gasoline tax. Motorists pay based on the number of gallons of fuel purchased. In this case, he said, electric vehicle owners already are paying fees and taxes to the electric company based on usage. There may be more electrons used by someone who is charging a vehicle. But Hoffman said all that is ignoring the real solution. Don't tax gasoline, diesel, or electricity. I believe it is the legislature's job to fund the core responsibilities, public safety and infrastructure being the most fundamental of those things, he said. That, however, doesn't mean Hoffman supports higher overall state taxes to make up for more than $1.8 billion going into the highway user revenue fund each year, $800 million of which is a levy on fossil fuels used to power motor vehicles. He figures there's enough in the state $17.6 billion budget to pick up the cost. His position is not a surprise. Hoffman has voted against virtually every spending plan since he was first elected to the legislature in 2020, and he insists that there is no company and no government that cannot find a way to cut 4.5% from its spending. That, however, is likely to get a fight from the majority of lawmakers who just approved the new budget who have priorities they want funded, whether it's healthcare, prisons, social services, or even pet projects. Still, there is some precedent for the idea of the state using its income and sales tax revenues to build roads. In fact, the new budget actually has millions of dollars of carve-outs for specific road projects like widening a stretch of Interstate 10 west of Phoenix to making improvements to State Route 347 that runs between the edge of Phoenix and Maricopa. And it's not just big projects. General fund dollars The money largely collected in sales and income taxes are also being earmarked for things like adding a second right turn lane to State Route 87 in Payson, and providing traffic control systems in Colorado City. There's also the precedent of voters approving local sales taxes for specific transportation projects, including not just road construction and maintenance, but also mass transit. Governor Katie Hobbs, asked about the issue, said the state needs a creative solution to finding a way to ensure that everyone who uses state roads pays a fair share. The way that the gas tax works right now is not fair, she said. The governor, however, said she has no answer. But will she vote for the ballot measure? I have not thought that far ahead, she said. The issue of how to fund road construction and repair actually transcends alternate fuel vehicles and predates their current increasing popularity. A decade ago, Noel Campbell, then a Republican state representative from Prescott, proposed a dime a gallon increase in the gas tax. He pointed out that the rate was set in and hasn't been adjusted since 1991. Had it kept pace with inflation, the levy in 2025 would be about 45 cents a gallon. Conversely, the buying power of the current 18-cent levy is worth only about a third. Complicating matters beyond the increasing popularity of electric vehicles is that fewer cars and trucks generally are more efficient than older ones. That means a typical vehicle travels more miles on a gallon of gas, meaning less need to purchase more fuel, even as the number of miles of people travel and provide wear and tear on state roads is not going down. Campbell, however, found little appetite among fellow lawmakers for a tax hike, even if it were referred to as to voters. And successive lawmakers have had no more luck. Title of the next front page article is Samaritans Cry, Somos Amigos. This article was written by Sierra Blazer of the Arizona Daily Star. Gail Kukurik can be found in the Arizona side of the border wall two or three times a week, her arms waving high as she yells, Somos Amigos, meaning we are friends. Kukurik starts her travels about 7 a.m. in Tucson, first stocking up on food, water, and first aid essentials, before making a two-hour drive to the near-abandoned border town of Sesebe. She'll often stop and walk across the checkpoint to feed the dogs at the U.S.-Mexican border before continuing her mission to find migrants who need humanitarian aid. Kukurik has worked for the Tucson Samaritans, a volunteer-run humanitarian aid group, for about 12 years. The group provides water, food, first aid, and other essential items to migrants who cross the border into the Arizona desert. The Samaritans' goal is to alleviate the suffering of people who are making the arduous journey to a better life across the harsh Sonoran Desert, according to the group's website. The most dangerous land crossing is probably the Sonoran Desert, especially this time of year, Kukurik said. You can't carry enough water to get across the desert. It's impossible. Between 2000 and May 2025, the remains of 4,384 migrants have been found in the desert that surrounds Tucson, according to Pima County Medical Examiner's Office. Summer temperatures can exceed 120 degrees, and the mountainous terrain can require climbing over rocks that are even hotter. Since 1994, the U.S. has tried to stop unauthorized border crossings through a strategy called Prevention Through Deterrence. It primarily tries to deter illegal border crossings by making them more dangerous. It doesn't work, the Samaritans say, and has instead led to an increase in deaths. They, Border Patrol agents, go out every morning and look for cuts through their $18 billion wall, Kukurik said. It doesn't keep people away. After more than 20 years of giving humanitarian aid in the desert, the Tucson Samaritans, along with the Green Valley Suarita Samaritans, are being featured in an upcoming documentary by Arizona filmmaker David Damian Figueroa. The documentary, titled The Samaritans, Compassion Knows No Borders, tells a story of what Figueroa calls extreme volunteering. It's a little bit different than what most volunteers do because they are challenged with all kinds of the elements of the desert, the climate, the vigilantes, and all the things that they are subjected to in order to do this work and try to deter deaths in the desert, Figueroa said. That's what the story is about. It's very simple. It's not political. It just talks about how incredible these humanitarians are in the desert. The film will be part of the project called The Truth About Migrants and the Border, Stories of Humanity and Hope. Some of the stories in the documentary are already being brought to film festivals and college campuses across the U.S., including Stanford University, Fordham University, and the University of Arizona as short films for lectures. One of these short films, Shura, was released last year. I'm doing this like once a week, Figueroa said. I'm trying to get people to spread the message about why migrants cross and that they're human beings. Figueroa grew up doing farm work in cities across Arizona, from Yuma and Buckeye to Gila Bend and parts of Phoenix. It's what shaped his thoughts on migrants. The borderlands were very different back in the day. My grandparents were here when it was a territory, Figueroa said. My parents and my grandparents have a lot of pride that we grew up as farm workers. Figueroa sang and performed throughout high school and was later a grand finalist at the Buscando Estrellas, or International Star Search, where he made it to the finals in the male vocalist category. From there, he got involved with social justice campaigns and became a publicist for celebrities in Los Angeles, which is what generated his interest in show production. Eva Longoria is the one who got me into film. The first film we did together was The Harvest, which was about a migrant child farm workers, and the second was Food Chains, he said. Both films are on YouTube, and Food Chains is available on Netflix. Figueroa met the Green Valley Samaritans in 2014 when he went on a trip with Shura Velin, one of the founders. He said her dedication to the work she does was so inspiring to him that he told her he'd someday make a film about her. I kept saying I wanted to do this film on the Samaritan, which is how I got into this now, Figueroa said. There's people like myself who have moved here because of Shura. I mean, it's just an honor. Figueroa said his goal for the film is to be able to show another side of the dangers of crossing the border. I want to be able to get people to think alternatively, that migrants' lives are worth saving, he said. The work that we're doing is a form of resistance. Marching and protesting is very, very important, but that's where one day and gone the next. The Samaritans have shown almost 25 years of consistency. Figueroa plans to have the film completed in August before bringing it to college campuses and film festivals, including Sundance, South by Southwest, and the Arizona International Film Festival across the country. He hopes to have it available on a streaming service in early 2026 and get it Oscar-qualified shortly after. I just wish there were more people with understanding, Kokurek said. I wish more people had empathy and compassion. As of May, remains have been found in the deserts of 11 migrants who had died within 8 months of being discovered, according to the medical examiner's office. The number is slightly less than it was about this year last year, which counted 16 similar deaths, even though there has been a massive crackdown on border security on both sides. If there's one person crossing, we look for them, Kokurek said. If we help one person that comes through, we're a success, because that one person could have been everything. Volunteer information for the Tucson Samaritans can be found on their website. While most members are 55 or plus, the organization accepts volunteers of all ages. Now we'll turn the page to the Tucson and region section of the Arizona Daily Star for several important and informative articles there. The first item is titled, Homeless Numbers Rise. This article was written by Charles Spoiler of the Arizona Daily Star. The overall population of homeless people is slightly higher, along with the number of individuals who are using local shelter programs, a recent one-day count conducted this year across Pima County shows. The Tucson-Pima collaboration to end homelessness called its point-in-time count, conducted on January 29th, a snapshot of households experiencing homelessness on a single night. Results from the counts were released last week. The effort, which involved over 400 volunteers, identified 2,818 people in 1,857 households residing in shelter, transitional housing, or living without shelter that night, according to a news release. This year's count included Catalina and Ajo for the first time, TPCH said. TCPH is a coalition of Tucson area organizations committed to the mission of ending homelessness in Tucson and Pima County. PIT counts are required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the group said. January's one-day count was about 5.5% higher than the 2024 count, which tallied 2,102 people. But the key, or rather the, but that figure is likely an undercount. The PIT counts should not suggest or state that this is a fully accurate count, but rather it is a one-time, as we call it, snapshot of January 29th, said Ernesto Portillo, a spokesman for Tucson's Housing and Community Development Department. In March, HCD Director Ann Janeka told the Star that the city owns about 2,000 housing units, operates 90 shelter beds, and was supporting 583 emergency shelter beds. At that time, she said, the city also administers 5,500 vouchers through its Housing Choice Voucher Program, which essentially acts as rental assistance. About 30,000 people in total were on the wait list for all those services, Janeka said in March. On Thursday, Portillo said that figure still is accurate. The lion's share of those 30,000 people are on wait lists for housing vouchers, he said. Of the 2,818 homeless people counted in January, 1,276 were unsheltered homeless people, about 45% of all those contacted, while 942 were in sheltered setting on the night of the count. Of those counted, more than 86% were males and nearly half were white, according to data summarized by TPCH. The count showed 1,902 people were at least 25 years old, while 204 were under the age of 18. That's up from a 2024 count of 175 homeless minors. It also showed 842, nearly 38% of the 2,218 people counted in January, were chronically homeless, which is defined as people who have experienced homelessness for at least a year, or repeatedly, while struggling with a disabling condition such as serious mental illness, substance use disorder, or physical disability. TPCH said in its report, citing the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, overall, the number of unsheltered homeless people remained about the same when compared to last year's point-in-time count, but the number of sheltered people increased by over 120. Having anyone living on the streets is devastating. The high demand for homeless shelter and services pose a community-wide challenge, said TPCH Chairperson Shannon Fowler. TPCH and its partners are focused on alleviating this crisis through coordinating efforts to bring respite to our unsheltered neighbors and creating solutions to provide stable housing. The county's homeless population drastically increased post-COVID, TCPH data showed. The 2020 count produced a total of 1,324 people experienced sheltered or unsheltered homelessness. 2 years later, in 2022, the count jumped to 2,227. That two-year period also saw an explosion of the unsheltered homeless figures and, conversely, a decrease in sheltered homeless people. From 2020 to 2022, unsheltered numbers rose by nearly 1,000, while unsheltered numbers dropped from 745 to 578. Since the 2020-22 increase, the total number of homeless individuals counted has largely remained stable. The number of unsheltered individuals has gone down from 1,649 in 2022 to 1,276 counted in January, while the number of sheltered individuals increased from 578 in 2022 to 942 counted in January. Now we'll pause the broadcast reading for a reminder that you are listening to a broadcast reading of the Arizona Daily Star from Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Michael Shannon, and I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss any part of this program, you can access it on demand anytime on our website, www.sunsounds.org, from the broadcast info and audio link. Sun Sounds is also available on your smart home device. We'll continue now with the reading of the next article from the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star, titled, Pinal County is Still Biggest Cotton Producer. This article was written by Clara Migoya of the Arizona Republic. Pinal County is among the top 1% of the cotton-growing counties in the United States when it comes to yield, despite challenging conditions from extreme heat and water woes, according to a new analysis from the Arizona, or rather from the University of Arizona. La Paz and Maricopa counties also ranked high in the study. Growers in Pinal County produce more pounds of cotton per acre than the national average, the report said, and across the state, cotton farming and ginning, separating the cotton fiber from the seeds, contributed $322 million to the state economy. The presence and economic value of cotton farming today pale in comparison to the 1950s and 1980s, when six times more acres were planted across the state. But Arizona remains a top producer in the U.S., particularly for Pima cotton. That's one of the two kinds of cottons grown in the country, known for its softer and longer fibers. Among the findings, UA researchers showed that in the last decades, Arizona growers have sharply reduced pesticides and water usage from an average of 9 applications of insecticides per acre in the 1990s. Growers today average 0.58 applications per acre, and from 1984 to 2023, they produced 32% more cotton with the same amount of water. We know that we're using less water per acre, but I don't know if we had it on paper with data to back it up, said J.D. Rohner, executive director of the Arizona Cotton Growers Association. The industry is going through harder times today because of the costs of productions have gone up, while the price of the fiber is at a low. The price of cotton right now is what it was worth in 1980, but the price of a cotton picker in 1980 was $70,000. The price of a cotton picker today is $1.2 million, she added. Diesel, seed, and wages have also gone up. The price for the fiber would need to be higher for growers to pencil out costs. To have 60% cotton doesn't math. Food, fiber are a matter of national security. The industry has been pushing for higher subsidies and price support from the government. Under President Donald Trump's tax and policy bill, reference price of the benchmark price used to determine support payments would go up by 14% and up from 19% for crops like soybeans. Altogether, the proposal would pour $65.6 billion into the safety net program for a handful of crops, including cotton. This increase in farm subsidies and other elements of the farm program would be the third largest source of new spending, right behind defense spending, border security, and immigration enforcement. It can become a matter of national security if we're dependent on foreign countries to provide all of our food and fiber. That puts us in a very weak situation, said Rohner, about the importance of supporting community crops. The change in price support is not enough, she added, but it's a starting point. Cotton production in the U.S. has a hard time competing with countries that have fewer environmental regulations, but Rohner believes that it also makes more valuable, particularly for the technology and education investment around it. In Arizona, growers have the additional challenge of relying on scarce resources, while growers have improved water efficiency. It still takes about 4.2 acre-feet of water per acre to grow cotton. Alfalfa requires about 5 to 6 acre-feet of water. In Pinal County, most growers rely on groundwater after losing their allocation to Colorado River water 9 years before the expected date. Some areas depend almost exclusively on water from the San Carlos Reservoir and have seen reduced allocations of 0.6 acre-feet of water per acre due to drought. It would take 7 acres of land to grow even 1 acre of cotton. A voluntary program to retire farmland and sell water credits to housing developers could also incentivize some growers to sell some of their land or retire. Rona publicly supported the program and commended lawmakers for creating the program. "I don't want them to sell the land," she said, "but at the end of the day, that's in the cards for some of them." Growers in Pinal County produce more pounds of cotton per acre than the national average despite extreme heat and drought, a new report says. The title of the next article from the Tucson Region section of the Arizona Daily Star is AI Use and Public Health Subject of a UA Initiative. This article was written by Prarana Sanapanavar of the Arizona Daily Star. The University of Arizona has launched an initiative exploring how artificial intelligence can be used in public health by using tools that allow researchers to collect digital data from multiple sources and analyze it quickly. "We're training the next generation of public health professionals to use AI ethically and effectively to benefit all communities," said Dr. Iman Hakim, Dean of UA's Mel and Enid Zuckerman College of Public Health, in a news release. "Our college is already using AI in research and programs, giving students hands-on experience. We're providing the tools, the experience, and the space to explore how AI can help us do what we do best, protect and improve lives." The College of Public Health launched the AI for Public Health Initiative with new courses and research projects. It's part of the UA's $20 million investment in strategic research areas, including enhancing biomedical discoveries and healthcare outcomes with artificial intelligence and machine learning, according to a UA news release. As part of its focus on AI and public health, the UA also brought in an internationally recognized AI and data science expert, David Ebert, as the university's first chief AI and data science officer. The initiative, a collaborative effort with the UA's Global Health and Data Science Institute, also includes an inaugural Public Health and AI Summer School training program with 4 days of workshops to explore how AI can be used in public health with available tools. The training program had UA's experts, including Onichio Leal Nido, Dr. Marvin Slepian, and Nirav Merchant, introduce the basics of AI and discuss topics such as ethical and legal considerations of AI use of machine learning in patient care, and its challenges in government use. Industry leaders, county and officials, state officials, also spoke at the program. The idea was for participants to understand AI's relevance and its applications for public health practice, including surveillance, forecasting, risk prediction, and administrative tasks. The theme throughout the workshop week was that AI can be very useful, but also requires transparency and responsible, safe, effective, and equitable use with informed consent and human oversight. "We are entering an environment which is highly non-policed," said Slepian, a Regents Professor of Medicine, Medical Imaging, and Surgery at UA's College of Medicine, Tucson, and of Biomedical Engineering at the College of Engineering. "The onus is on us to put the regulatory up front. We need the law up front so we don't have hassles later." Slepian, who runs the Arizona Center for Accelerated Biomedical Innovation and is also a member of UA's Bio5 Institute, said, "AI is the buzzword for 2025, and that is not going anywhere. The summer program that was the brainchild of Nido, an assistant research professor of digital epidemiology at the Public Health College. The interest in the program, which attracted over 3,100 people internationally from different disciplines to the registration website, excited Nido. The program ended up having 52 attendees and a waiting list, although it was initially supposed to be capped at 25. Nido said he expects to create additional AI summer programs and also hopes to hold an international summit on this topic. "We are doing our best to get our students in a better position to be in the job market as soon as they get out of our programs." The next article is titled Animal Culture Traditions Gathered in UA Database. This article was written by Prarana Sanapanavar of the Arizona Daily Star. University of Arizona researchers have launched what they believe to be the first open access catalog of animal traditions in order to explore how social learning both shapes and is shaped by human-driven environmental change. The database will comprise a collection of vocal communications, mating displays, and play and other social behaviors observed in species from across the globe. The study, published in Scientific Data and introducing the Animal Culture Database, was authored by Kieran Basava, a postdoctoral research associate in UA's College of Information Science. There is a consensus among animal behavior researchers that cultural traditions and socially learned behaviors are important to conservation, said Basava. There are decades of research investigating these behaviors across different species that are gathered throughout the literature. We emphasize that work to facilitate creative research and discussions about how culture is defined across different species, as well as how animals respond to different environmental disturbances caused by humans. The study originated from the goal of understanding what different animal behaviors tells us about the relationship between human civilization and the animal kingdom. For instance, one question is why all elephants don't understand each other if they are moved by humans between herds to improve biodiversity and group health. The database was developed by Basava along with colleagues in the Information Science College. Christian Roman Palacios, an assistant professor, Kristen Martinet, a postdoctoral research associate, Hector Garcia Verdugo, a research associate, and Paige Cherry, an undergraduate student studying information science. Additional participants included Madalam, a graduate student in the School of Plant Science in the College of Agriculture, Life, and Environmental Sciences, and Liam Roberts, a graduate student in entomology and insect science. The Animal Culture Database will assist in teaching and understanding basic science, Roman Palacios said. You can investigate the origins by culture by not just tracing it back to humans, but by seeing how much variance there is between different species and asking what drives those differences. Culture is not just a human phenomenon, and this database can help investigate what drives culture across the animal kingdom. The database was developed by the researchers after reviewing thousands of studies on animal behavior published over the past decades, out of which more than 1,000 papers were selected to build the parameters. It now includes information from the 121 of those studies which consolidated data about the behaviors of 30 mammalian species, 30 avian species, and one insect species into a searchable online database. The core of the database includes an interactive world map in which populations of different species and details of their behaviors have been marked. This database can also be searched by species, behavior, or location. Basava said they are currently working to add information from more than 600 additional papers, and there are future plans to allow other scientists to add their own research to the database. Now it's time to flip the pages to the Nation and the World section of the Arizona Daily Star to check out several important news articles there. The first item is titled, Israeli Proposal on the Table. This article was written by Wafa Sharafa, Abby Sewell, and Karim Shayeb of the Associated Press, Dateline Deir al-Balah Gaza Strip. New details of the Gaza ceasefire proposal emerged on Sunday as Israel sent a negotiating team to Qatar ahead of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's White House visit for talks toward an agreement. Inside the territory, hospital officials said Israeli airstrikes killed at least 38 Palestinians. There are 20 hostages that are alive, 30 dead. We are determined to bring them all back. And we will also be determined to ensure that Gaza will no longer pose a threat to Israel, Netanyahu said before departing, emphasizing the goal of eliminating Hamas military and governing power. A person familiar with the negotiations shared with the Associated Press a copy of the latest ceasefire proposal submitted by mediators to Hamas. and its veracity were confirmed by two other people familiar with the document. All three spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the sensitive talks with the media. The document outlines plans for a 60-day ceasefire during which Hamas would hand over 10 living and 18 dead hostages. Israeli forces would withdraw to a buffer zone along Gaza's border with Israel and Egypt, and significant amounts of aid would be brought in. The document said the aid would be distributed by the United Nations agencies and the Palestinian Red Crescent. It does not specify what would happen to the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, the American organization that has distributed food aid since May. Israel wants it to replace the UN coordinated system. As in previous ceasefire agreements, Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli facilities will be released in exchange for the hostages, but the number is not yet agreed upon. The proposal stops short of guaranteeing a permanent end to the war, a condition demanded by Hamas, but says negotiations for a permanent ceasefire would take place during the 60 days. During that time, President Donald Trump guarantees Israel's adherence to halting military operations, the document says, adding that Trump will personally announce a ceasefire agreement. The personal guarantee by Trump appeared to be an attempt to reassure Hamas that Israel would not be unilaterally resume fighting as it did in March during a previous ceasefire when talks were extended, appeared to stall. Trump said last week that Israel had agreed on terms for a 60-day ceasefire, but it was unclear if the terms were those in the document reviewed by the AP. Hamas requested some changes but did not specify them. Separately, an Israeli official said the Security Cabinet late Saturday approved sending aid into northern Gaza, where civilians suffer from acute food shortages. The official declined to give details. Northern Gaza has seen just a trickle of aid entered since Israel ended the latest ceasefire in March. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation closest distribution site is near Netzarim Corridor, south of Gaza City, that separates the territories north and south. The next item is titled, Crew Abandons Ship. This article was written by John Gambrell of the Associated Press, Dateline Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Crew members aboard a Liberian flagged ship set ablaze by a series of attacks in the Red Sea abandoned the vessel Sunday night as it took on water, marking the first series assault in the vital corridor for trade after a month-long campaign by Yemen Houthis rebels there. Suspicion for the attack on the Greek-owned bulk carrier Magic Seas immediately fell on the Houthis, particularly as the security firm said it appeared bomb-carrying drones boat hit the ship after it was targeted by small arms and rocket-propelled grenades. The rebels' media reported on the attack but did not claim it. It can take them hours or even days before they acknowledge an assault. A renewed Houthi campaign against shipping could again draw in U.S. and Western forces to the area, particularly after President Donald Trump targeted the rebels in a major airstrike campaign. Shortly before midnight in Yemen, Israel's military issued a warning for three Houthis held ports and said airstrikes would begin shortly in Hudaya, Ras Isa and Salif, along with the Ras al-Khattab power station. The ship attack comes at a sensitive moment in the Middle East, as a possible ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war hangs in the balance, and as Iran weighs whether to restart negotiations over its nuclear program following American airstrikes targeting its most sensitive atomic sites amid an Israeli war against the Islamic Republic. It likely serves as a message that the Houthis continue to possess the capability and willingness to strike at strategic maritime targets regardless of diplomatic developments, wrote Mohammed al-Basha, a Yemen analyst at the Basha Report risk advisory firm. The British military's United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations Center first said that an armed security team on the unidentified vessel had returned fire against an initial attack, and that the situation is ongoing. It described the attack as happening some 60 miles southwest of Hodeidah, Yemen, which is held by the county's Houthis rebels. Authorities are investigating, it said. It later said the ship was on fire after being struck by unknown projectiles. Ambray, a private maritime security firm, issued an alert saying that the merchant ship had been attacked by 8 skiffs while transiting northbound in the Red Sea. Ambray later said the ship also had been attacked by bomb-carrying drone boats, which could mark a major escalation. It said 2 drone boats struck the ship, while another had been destroyed by the armed guards on board. The United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations Center said the ship was taking on water and its crew had abandoned the vessel. The U.S. Navy's Mideast-based Fifth Fleet referred questions to the military's Central Command, which said it was aware of the incident without elaborating. Our next item is titled Seething Over Tax Bill, Musk Forms His Own Party. This article was written by the Associated Press, Dateline Bridgewater, New Jersey. Elon Musk said he's carrying out his threat to form a new political party after his fissure with President Donald Trump, announcing the America Party in response to the president's sweeping tax cuts law. Musk wants an ever-present ally to Trump as he headed up the slashing agency known as the Department of Government Efficiency, broke with the Republican president over his signature legislation, which was signed into law Friday. As the bill made its way through Congress, Musk threatened to form the America Party if this insane spending bill passes. When it comes to bankrupting our country with waste and graft, we live in a one-party system, not a democracy, Musk said Saturday on X, the social media company he owns. Today, the America Party is formed to give you back your freedom. The formation of the new political parties is not uncommon, but they typically struggle to pull any significant support away from the Republican and Democratic parties. But Musk, the world's richest man who spent at least $250 million supporting Trump in the 2024 election, would impact the 2026 elections, determining control of progress if he's willing to spend big amounts of money. His reignited feud with the president could also be costly for Musk, whose businesses rely on billions of dollars in government contracts, and publicly traded company Tesla has taken a hit in the market. It wasn't clear whether Musk had taken steps to formally create the new political party. Now, from the digest feature of the Nation of the World section, we'll check out several short items of important news there. The first item is titled, Ukraine Drones Disrupt Airplane Travel in Russia. Russia and Ukraine struck each other with hundreds of drones on Sunday, throwing Russian air travel in disarray shortly after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announced deals with Western partners that would allow Kyiv to scale up drone production. Photos circulating on social media showed crowds huddling at Russian airports, including key international hubs in Moscow and St. Petersburg, as hundreds of flights were delayed or canceled due to Ukrainian drone strikes on Saturday and overnight, according to Russia's transport ministry. The flight disruptions hit Moscow's Sheremetyevo and St. Petersburg main Pulkovo airports. Other airports in western and central Russia also faced disruptions. Next item is titled, Developing Nations Criticize Tariff Increases. Dateline Rio de Janeiro. The BRICS bloc of developing nations on Sunday condemned the increase of tariffs and attacks on Iran, but refrained from naming U.S. President Donald Trump. The group's declaration, which also took aim at Israel's military actions in the Middle East, mentioned war-torn Ukraine just once. China's President Xi Jinping did not attend a BRICS summit for the first time since he became his country's leader in 2012. Russian President Vladimir Putin, who will make an appearance via video conference, continues to mostly avoid traveling abroad due to an international arrest warrant issued after Russia invaded Ukraine. The group's declaration raised serious concerns about the rise of tariffs, which it said were inconsistent with WTO, that was the World Trade Organization, rules, the document says. The group added that those restrictions threatened to reduce global trade, disrupt global supply chains, and introduce uncertainty. And now for some brief items. First item titled Methane Deaths. 5 Turkish soldiers died Sunday after exposure to methane gas while searching a cave in northern Iraq for the remains of a fellow soldier killed by Kurdish militants in 2022, the Turkish Defense Ministry said. Next item, titled EU-China Trade. China said Sunday that European medical device companies will be barred from selling to the Chinese government as a countermeasure for the European Union's restrictions on the sale of similar products from China. Next item, titled Papal Vacation. Pope Leo XIV arrived Sunday in the papal summer retreat of Castel Gandolfo to start a 6-week vacation, giving the hilltop town back its most illustrious resident after Pope Francis stayed away during his 12-year pontificate. Next item, titled Death Toll. The death toll from a collapsed multi-story residential building in Pakistan's Karachi city rose to 27 on Sunday as a 3-day rescue operation ended, officials said. Rescuers pulled 11 more bodies from the rubble of the building that collapsed on Friday, officials said. Next item, titled Arson Attack. Angelo Loras, 34, was charged Sunday over an arson attack on a Melbourne synagogue in an apparent escalation of anti-Semitic violence in Australia's second most populous city. Next item, titled Pet Lion. The owners of a pet lion that escaped from a farmhouse and injured a woman and her 2 children were arrested in the eastern Pakistani city of Lahore. Authorities said Sunday after a video footage showed the lion leaping over a wall before attacking victims. We've reached the end of the digest section. All the articles from the digest were compiled by the Associated Press. Due to time constraints, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Arizona Daily Star, the Monday, July 7th, 2025 edition. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, this is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. Thank you very much for listening.